You are listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Thank you for that. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Here we go now. Stephen Esposito joins us again, Executive Director and Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director at Morgan Stanley. He's in Lake Forest. Thanks for joining us today, Stephen. I hope you're well.
Oh, thank you, and hope you are too.
I am, and I noticed that you are paying attention to something I'm not that familiar with, the PMI. Can you talk about this index and why it's important?
Well, the Purchasing Manager Index is a good leading indicator of what they're going to be doing going forward, what they expect to happen in the economy and demand. And what you're seeing in the PMI, both the services and manufacturing, were both substantially better than expected again today. This continues to get better and better. Anything above 50 is positive. We're in the 60 to 70 range between them. So the purchasing managers see business out there, and they're obviously increasing their position. So that's another bullish indicator for the economy among dozens of others that should bode well for investors.
I wonder if people like you probably pay attention to that. Maybe people like me should pay more attention to that. Retail sales tell me what we bought today or bought last month. This would tell us what they're going to start loading into the stores, anticipating our purchases, right?
And that's across the board, not just that, but just in general. Manufacturing, et cetera.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. There's a lot of leading indicators. That's one of the better ones.
And just expand on that a little bit. You did just now. So it's not just things that I'm going to find at Target or Costco, but
no.
Tires and everything, huh?
It's pretty much across the board. I mean, it gives you an idea of what they're thinking. And if they're out there, again, anything above a rating of 50 is considered bullish. And when you're in the 60 to 70 range, that's quite bullish.
So they're expecting that we are going to make more purchases, even though people are worried about inflation, and we're always worried about the next turn on this coronavirus, but this is very bullish, isn't it?
Absolutely. I've been talking about this for months now. I don't believe Wall Street has any, in all fairness to the analysts, cannot predict with any kind of accuracy the numbers that are going to be coming out over the next 3, 6, 12 months, because you're coming from a total lockdown to a reopening, and this pent-up demand combined with massive amounts of cash on the sidelines and people just want to celebrate getting out, you're going to see earnings that are going to just be substantially better in those areas. And we're seeing it already. Many of the retailers across the board, many of the automobile companies, et cetera, are putting in numbers up that are just way above what expectations are. And honestly, that's the first quarter. We're not done with the second quarter yet. Wait till it's all open here, and wait till Europe opens up later in the year. You're going to see demand like you haven't seen since the Roaring Twenties.
Well, forecasters are saying something like 9% growth this year. Are you talking, though, about the value of the Dow or the NASDAQ? Do you have a number in mind? I mean, you're predicting that it's going to continue to go up, right?
The indexes, to me, as I've said this for a while, the indexes, to me, don't really represent the broad economy. It's so heavily weighted towards technology, depending on which index, the NASDAQ especially, and the S&P 500, the Dow maybe not as much. But when you really dissect the indexes year-to-date are doing okay, and a year would be great. But if you look underneath the market, the broad market of companies in the cyclical category, which we've talked about, are just doing substantially better, and I mean markedly better in terms of performance. And I think that's going to continue. It just isn't reflected in the indexes. And that's what people are missing out, this concept that just buying ETFs in the indices are always going to win. And that's not the case. It's going back to stock picking, and that's what we're seeing right now, and it's been fantastic.
Are there some stocks or specific sectors then that you like? If you were picking them, where would you go?
I can tell you what. I can't tell you specifics, but I can tell you I've been a buyer of the financials. You know, I've been buying really since a year ago when the markets were down and when the cyclicals were being jettisoned. I'm very, very big into contrarian investing. Anything with leisure. When the economy, people are going to be flying, they're going to be going to hotels. Automobiles, you can't get cars. When the new cars start finally being delivered here in the second and third quarters, you're going to see a big boom in the sales there. Just anything related to the economy is going to do well. Interest rates are stubbornly staying lower here on the 10-year. I think that's going to go higher by year end, and that's yield curve that steepens is great for financials. They're in great shape. You're going to see less defaults on loans. And you just see more profit going forward. So I think those sectors, healthcare is really something people are watching out. They're worried about price controls. I think I'm not sure where that's going to come out, but I think there's a lot of value there. And really, I would really look for dividend stocks. In the president's proposed tax hikes, they're not talking about raising the taxes on dividend income, which will remain to 20%. that could be a sleeping giant for investors who are conservative looking for income to get some of those dividends at 3, 4, 5, 6% and have them taxed at a maximum rate of 20% if that holds. That's something that could really benefit later in the year and into 2022.
I got to go. Do you like Tesla, by the way? Do you think that's, you mentioned automobiles. Do you like that stock?
It's a great company. Our analyst, I know, likes it. I think the stock for me, for what I do, is, shall we say, more than fairly valued. I'm not into high multiple stocks, high P ratios. They've got to be perfect going forward to be able to meet all those needs in the price. And the stock moves on its own. It doesn't really move all that, in my opinion, on the real fundamentals or the earnings. It moves more on the EV cycle. And there's a lot of companies coming into that industry. So I don't own the stock, I can tell you that.
Stephen Esposito, Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director at Morgan Stanley over in Lake Forest. Nice to talk to you, Stephen. Let's visit again.
Thank you.
Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst at Bankrate. They always do these interesting surveys. You can find them at bankrate.com. Ted, welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
You guys have some new information about how people are paying for summer child care, right?
That's right. We found that almost half of parents who are going to pay for summer child care are going to incur credit card debt in the process. And I think that's concerning because credit card rates are still quite high. The average is usually anywhere from about 16% to about 24%, depending on your credit score. And we're talking big bucks, too. The average per child is $834 for the summer, but for the school year, it's way more than that. It's about $750 a month, which equates to about $7,500 over a 10-month school year. So this is a big pain point for a lot of parents.
So if you've got a couple little kids, you're looking at, do I hear you say 15, 16 grand, something like that, right?
That's right. Yeah. So in some cases, this is actually rivaling another mortgage or rent payment, basically. There's really a lot of cost associated with this. It's leading a lot of people to leave the workforce or at least adjust their work hours. We found that 56% of parents say that either they or their spouse have changed their work schedule at some point during the pandemic to care for their kids. 17% said they or their spouse left the workforce entirely. And this is a big topic these days because a lot of people are talking about, well, maybe it's the expanded unemployment benefits that are keeping people home. I think childcare is a huge reason why a lot of people are not ready to go back to work yet. There's still a lot of restrictions at schools and daycares and camps, and kids under 12 are not eligible to be vaccinated yet. Now, hope is coming. Progress is coming. I think it'll be better in a few months, but I think the summer is still going to be kind of this weird in-between.
I also know anecdotally that some child care providers in day schools or preschools won't get the vaccine. So some parents are making the decision then not to have their child go there, which means the parent has to stay home, which means they don't work or work less. They certainly work differently if they were working and taking care of a child. You know what I do, too, when I come up with a number? Say it's $15,000 something's going to cost you for the year. In order to have $15,000 to spend, you probably have to make $20,000. What does your job pay? $40,000? 20 of it just went for the care of the kids so you can go make the 40. I mean, at some point, you say, is it worth going to work when I have to pay that much for child care?
I think that's exactly right. So we're hearing about all these jobs, like 8 million job vacancies in America, and why aren't these getting filled? I think that calculation is a big part of it. I think a lot of people are saying, you know, I'm just not sure the numbers work. Like, I'm not sure that I'm going to earn enough money to justify the childcare cost. I was struck also in our research that just under half of parents are paying for childcare, and that seemed really low to me. But what I think it shows is that people are getting creative. You know, sometimes one parent is staying home full time. Other times parents are kind of juggling schedules and maybe they're trading on and off with watching the kids or working part time or maybe calling in favors from grandma and grandpa, friends and neighbors. You know, people are looking into low cost summer childcare options. One that I've heard about is you pay some high school kids to basically run a backyard camp with you and some friends' kids. And, you know, that's an option. There's town camps, there's church camps. You know, there's a lot of lower cost things that people can do because if you're paying full freight, it's a big expense.
Well, Well, did you mention grandparents in that list? Because I know a lot of grandparents are watching the kids 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days a week. Some of them are parent. I don't want to say they're parenting those kids, but from 8 to 5, there's a lot of grandparents who, for free, are watching the kids. I mean, because maybe they wouldn't take the money from their adult children, but the grandkids are a lot of times in the care of the grandparents these days.
I agree. That's a big trend I've been seeing as well. Something else I wanted to work into the conversation here is that expanded child tax credit. So starting in July, most parents are going to start getting monthly stipends. This used to be a $2,000 per kid credit that you would get on your taxes when you file them, you know, the following year. Well, now they're going to start delivering some of that in monthly installments starting in July. And I think this is really going to help people because we've talked about how expensive this is. Well, you know, now if your kid is under 6, you're going to start getting $300 a month per child. And then if your kid is 6 or older, you're going to get $250 a month. Mm-hmm. Now, this is from July through the end of the year. And then you also get another portion of this when you file your taxes next year. I think this is going to serve as another stimulus payment of sorts. I don't think we're going to get a fourth direct stimulus payment, but I really think this could help fill some of the void for parents. It may contribute to people being able to go back to work.
Yeah, I understand that to be the case, too, that it's funded for 12 months, so a year, 6 months through this year. Through this year, you will get it as a monthly check. The Biden administration has said that they would like to at least explore continuing that through 2025, but it's only for a year now that that's in place, right?
That's correct. I think a lot of parents would love to see this extended. I think it will provide relief. I mean, it's not going to solve the entire problem, but it's some of it. I know the Biden administration is also working on other plans, like, for example, some additional funding for schools, including preschools and daycares. And, you know, because another thing here is just how much is changing on the fly. And it's been a very weird planning time for the summer, really for so many things. But, you know, we're talking here about summer childcare. I feel like a lot of parents are scrambling to arrange things on later notice than usual. We're talking about capacity restrictions. We're talking about kind of what's open, what's not, what are you comfortable with? A lot of times parents try to have this buttoned up like in the wintertime, sort of looking ahead to the summer. But I feel like this year a lot of it is changing rapidly, and now it's almost upon us with the end of the school year. So I think that, you know, it's something that's stressing parents out, but I do think there are some things you can do to help. One other is that 0% balance transfer credit cards and 0% intro APR credit cards are making a bit of a comeback. Banks were reluctant to issue these last year with all the uncertainty, but that's starting to become an option, especially if you have better credit. So it's still debt. You got to pay it back, but it's another tool in the toolbox, perhaps.
Let's close with this point, Ted, and it's the first one you made. I think it's worth reiterating. Whatever these expenses are for you and your family, remember about half of the folks are transferring some of these costs to credit cards that are 16 to 25%. So whatever the costs are, never mind the gross amount of money you need to earn in order to net the amount of money to pay for these things, and then you put it on a credit card that's costing you double digits all over again.
That's right. It's something I worry about. Credit card debt can be very persistent. You know, it's easy to get into it. It's hard to get out of it. The good news is that overall credit card debt has fallen 17% since the pandemic started. But I'm worried that we may start to see that reverse because of all these cost pressures we're talking about.
That's Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst at Bankrate.com. Nice to talk to you, Ted. Thanks for your insight.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay, we said earlier in the show that there is still some money out there. You thought that everybody was aware of every nickel? Maybe not. Here is Larry Chester, the founder and president of CFO Simplified. Welcome back, Larry. I'm glad you could join us.
Hey, John, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Glad you were able to have me on.
Employee retention credit. I guess if I was a boss or a business owner, I'd know about this. What is this?
You know, I think it's something that very few people know about. This is a special IRS program to help companies that have been dramatically affected by COVID. The IRS has always had an employee retention credit available, but it's mostly been applied very specifically to areas that have had that have been dramatically affected by weather problems, tornadoes that have devastated communities or storms or hurricanes of different kinds. And in this particular case, what they've done is they've designated really the entire United States as a disaster area and have said that companies that have had dramatically reduced sales are eligible for this credit.
How do you demonstrate? How dramatically? What's the threshold for that?
Okay, well, it's broken into really two sections. So for people that have had a drop of sales in their company of at least 50% during any individual quarter of 2020 are eligible. And for 2021, it's an 80% reduction. I mean, a 20% reduction, having sales equal to 80% of what they were in the reference year, which is 2019. But where this really comes into play is that they're giving you a credit based on the amount of employees you've had, up to 50% of the wages that you've paid them to a maximum of $10,000 in wages per employee. So for people who are collecting, who have had a loss of earnings or loss of sales of 50%, they can get literally $5,000 a credit for each employee for the entire year of 2020. So if an employer, for instance, has 10 employees and they've paid each one of them a minimum of $40,000 for the year, they will get the possible credit of $50,000, $5,000 for each one of those employees for the entire year. Now, if you qualify for 2021, it's even better. It's 70% of that first $10,000 of qualified wages. But rather than being paid for the entire year, it's calculated on a quarter-to-quarter basis. So that's 70% of that $10,000, that's $7,000 per employee, times each quarter that your sales are only 80% of what the original sales were. So that could be four quarters. So that's $28,000 per employee times 10 employees. That's $280,000 for 2021 if you had a drop in sales of 20%.
And do they rebate you on your payroll taxes then? Do they send you a check? How do you capture that benefit?
Well, first of all, obviously you have to be eligible and then you have to apply for it. But it's like filing any tax return. So you file this application and you can either refile your 941 taxes for the prior quarters, or you can just use that as a credit for your future 941 taxes. And that is a credit against your Social Security and Medicare taxes in most cases going forward. Or you can, in some cases, get a rebate from the government, and they'll write you a check because you've overpaid, in effect, your taxes for the prior periods.
Understood. And did you say that it's actually a more generous threshold for 2021 than 2020?
It's a more generous rebate because it's 70% rather than 50% for 2020. But the threshold isn't as the threshold is even better also because for 2020 you had to have a drop of sales of 50%, and for 2021 it only has to be a drop in sales of 20%.
Yeah, that's what I was driving at, and I'm trying to figure out what the logic of that is, because 2021 is it compared to 2020, or is 2020 the year that you're talking about?
No, 2020 is the year that I'm talking about. The reference year in both of these instances is 2019.
I see. So you're comparing the sales in those
years.
Quarter
to quarter.
Yeah.
Right. This is quarter to quarter comparing 2020 to 2019 or 2021 to 2019.
And okay, I think I got a handle on this, but I would hope that were I a business person who'd suffered mightily, I would well be aware of this. You say some folks aren't, huh?
I'm telling you that most business owners aren't. Hmm. And even payroll services who are providing all the information for this, I don't think are promoting this to their clients and people who are using their payroll services either. I just called a number of the major payroll services, ADP, Paychex, Paylocity, Heartland, and the people on the phone there really don't even know what the ERC is all about. I think it's really important for every business owner to call and talk to their accountant and say, are you looking into ERC for your clients? Will you look into the ERC for me? And can you tell me what I should be getting back and whether I qualify? Because it's really the tax accountants that are the people who should be doing this filing for you. In my work with my clients, and I talk to my clients, our company's clients, I found that they were surprised when I told them that this was even available.
Yeah,
I don't
right.
think this is something that's very heavily publicized at all.
Well, maybe everybody should call Larry Chester, the founder and president of CFO Simplified. Visit him at CFOSimplified.com. Would that be okay, Larry?
That'd be great. I'm more than happy to talk to anybody about this or anything, any other financial issues that they may have with their companies.
And I guess a simple Google search of what we're talking about might also be helpful, right? Employee retention credit. I presume the IRS has a page on their website about this.
Yes, they do. And there are a number of accounting firms that have web pages that talk about this specifically. I think sometimes if you read the IRS descriptive information, it can get a little confusing, but they've tried to make this fairly clear on their website. But you're still going to need to fill out the forms and file the forms.
Yeah.
And if it's and it's best if you have an accountant do it to make sure that you're eminently qualified for the rebate.
CFOSimplified.com. Okay, Larry, nice to talk to you. Thanks for the insight today.
Great talking to you too, John. Thanks again.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. McDonald's has been slapped with a $10 billion lawsuit accusing the company of racial discrimination tied to its advertising practices. The lawsuit was filed on the same day McDonald's announced a doubling of its U.S. media spending with black-owned media and production properties. Media mogul Byron Allen's company claims McDonald's intentionally discriminated against its entertainment studios and Weather Group. The lawsuit alleges McDonald's spent less than $5 million of its roughly $1.6 billion annual TV advertising budget on African-American-owned media. McDonald's says it's reviewing the lawsuit. Bartlett-based sausage maker Greco & Sons is being purchased by food distribution powerhouse Sysco. Terms of the deal haven't been announced. Greco & Sons was founded in 1990 and operates 10 distribution centers nationwide. Its customers include thousands of restaurants, bars, schools, and grocery stores. Besides making sausage, the company also processes meats and distributes thousands of products, including produce, canned goods, desserts, cheese, pastas, and janitorial supplies. The company's annual revenue is $800 million. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. I have some more McDonald's news for you. The McDonald's is hoping to get its indoor dining rooms open again by the end of August. That's according to Bloomberg. Also, according to Bloomberg, some of the franchisees are saying, we're good. Drive-through business is just fine. We actually don't have enough staff to open up the indoor dining anyway, so we'll see how that works out. Some really rich people potentially got a lot richer yesterday with the IPO of Oatly, one of the fake milks made from oats. Oprah, Natalie Portman are among the backers. Oatly today is up about 8%, second day of trading. Meanwhile, the question about oat, almond, rice, pea, soy, hemp, and whatever other kind of fake milk is, are they good for you?
I think the question is really more complicated than just that.
That's Dr. Ed McDonald, the Associate Director of Clinical Nutrition for the University of Chicago and a trained chef. He says some people, whether they want to or not, cannot drink cow's milk.
There are people who are lactose intolerant. There are people who have milk protein allergies.
If you're switching or thinking about it, don't get sucked in by false or misleading advertising.
People just rely on marketing and say, oh, this is healthy because Oatly said it's healthy. But look at the label and actually see what you're getting.
And pay attention to carbs and sugars.
Yeah, I mean, in general, sugary beverages can increase the risk of weight gain, can increase the risk of developing diabetes, and also insulin resistance.
Another concern is what's called bioavailability, meaning all of the added ingredients to fake milk, such as calcium, are not easily absorbed into the body. Dairy consumption is at an all-time high, thanks mainly to cheese. And while most of us still drink cow's milk, the amount we drink has been going down for over 40 years. Fake milk has become a multi-billion-dollar industry. As for Dr. McDonald, He's lactose intolerant, and his choice for a milk replacement is
pea milk, primarily because the pea milks do have a little bit of fiber, and they're also higher in protein, about 8 grams of protein, which is similar to what you would find in cow's milk.
And if the cost of the fake milk is an issue?
And some of these milks you can make at home.
Yeah, I just Googled how to make nut milk, and I got 134 million results in 0.8 seconds, including that machine I mentioned a few weeks ago that sits on your counter and does all the work for you. Dr. McDonald has some cool things going on at the University of Chicago campus that we'll talk about in coming weeks, including working on overcoming the nutrition deficit on the south side of Chicago. Chicago were to trade. Wheat is down about 2.5 cents right now. Now, soybeans are up or down about 7 cents, and corn is also down. Make it a trifecta, down about 5 cents. At the Merck, we've got a green screen with hogs up $3. Feeder cattle are up $1.27, and live cattle are up 72.5 cents. Today's Farm to Your Belly feature, National Strawberries and Cream Day. A real cream for me, please. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Sun is shining. It's warm outside. Wait till you hear the forecast and current conditions in 8 minutes from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN. One sign of summer arriving, Buckingham Fountain goes off at 2 o'clock tomorrow. And Navy Pier is set to reopen fully, as I understand it, but more next weekend. In fact, they're about completely opened right now. Marilyn Gardner joins us right now on WGN, President and CEO of Navy Pier. Hi, Marilyn. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
So what is happening now and what still needs to happen to be 100%?
Well, so thrilled that you asked. First off, the weather is cooperating beautifully. Yeah. So as we're gearing up and as more shops and restaurants are coming online throughout the pier, the crowds are starting to arrive. It's so great to see guests coming back to the pier and enjoying all that we have to offer. So all of the exteriors have been open the last couple of weeks. And obviously the rides in the park are Centennial Wheel, and we have two new rides that will be opening up next week. We have a drop tower, which will be great, really exciting to have something new in the park, as well as a teacup ride for the younger set. So we're gearing up in Pier Park, and the boats are operating. Yeah. Our tour boats, our dining cruises, and we've been hosting fireworks every Saturday throughout May as a treat for the city, certainly, and we will move forward with our twice-weekly fireworks programs beginning next weekend. And everyone's been anxiously awaiting live music and live performances, and those will begin next weekend as well. So we're thrilled. We have a great new program this summer called Skyline Sessions to kick off the weekend on Thursday and Friday evenings. And then we'll go into our Wave Wall Wax and Wave Wall Moves programs on Saturdays. And then our regular fitness programs, our movies in the park will all be coming back online. So it's great. We're looking forward to welcoming everybody back out to enjoy our vast open spaces and the great views of the lakefront and skyline, and really get back to enjoying summer together.
What's the drop box?
The drop tower. So it's a ride where we strap in about 16 people at a time, and it rises up about 100 feet in the air and then drops slowly and goes up and down and then drops dramatically. It's more of a thrill ride, let's call it.
Yeah.
Than an amusing. Yeah. So it'll be fun. It's a fun new addition to the park.
What was that hotel, or not hotel, but the terrace bar that opened up a couple of summers ago?
Sure. So Offshore is actually part of the new Sable Hotel. Our hotel opened in March, and it features a wonderful Spanish restaurant called Lyrica. And as you might imagine, the views from the hotel rooms and from the public spaces within the hotel are just drop dead gorgeous, and they're all the rooms face south, overlooking the lake, and have dramatic and beautiful views back to the city. So it's a wonderful amenity that will ensure, you know, a real year round presence at the pier, and we'll be adding programming throughout the year to complement the hotel as well. And stay tuned for some new attractions that will also be coming in the next months.
If someone just wanted to have a soda and take in the view, right, they can just go there, go up onto that deck, if you will, and enjoy it that way, right?
Absolutely. And obviously stroll the entire South Dock.
Yep.
But then offshore is a wonderful spot for lunch, an appetizer, a cocktail, a soda. But just, you know, again, there are spectacular views, and I don't think there's any better place to watch the sunset. Every night the canvas is different. So it's an absolutely beautiful spot.
I agree. I've been there, and I must say, I mean, so many of the great views, if you will, of the city are west of downtown, looking at the city lights, or on Lakeshore Drive, looking at the lake, or at the city lights. But it's quite unique to be out on the water, looking at the water and back at the city. And if you have a nice breeze or a warm day and a cold beverage, I would say that is one of the premier Chicago experiences in terms of a view and a beverage. I think it's spectacular. I really do.
Absolutely. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
No kidding.
Shocking.
Find out more at navypier.org. Navypier.org. It's music, it's food, it's beverage, it's the boat rides, it's the rides in the park. The centennial wheel is turning, and it's good to have summer and the pier back. Marilyn Gardner, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, John. Take care.